Bippity boppity boo. Do we have a live stream? It appears we have a live stream. Welcome. Good morning. 14 April. Let's grab the link for the patrons. Post this up very quickly. Fabulous. Tremendous. By the way, if you aren't getting notifications from YouTube, please make sure that you're subscribed and you've rung the bell. And also, we post these things on Patreon every time we do one, so you should get a little, what do you call that, notification over there. Not I, but the Spice Girls. Good morning, Jay Morris. Shalom. Good morning, everybody. Fabuloso. We're going to start the morning. Good morning, Hami Biscuits, my lovely, talented Alex E., and everybody else in the chat. We appreciate y'all. We're going to start this morning with a weekly threat matrix. I know many of y'all, Loomph, good morning. Many of y'all have been asking for the triumphant return of the threat matrix. So we're going to start with that. If I could get a quick confirmation in the chat that my audio is 5x5 Lima Charlie, that would be appreciated. Can y'all hear me? Scott and Christy Weiss, can you hear me? Dakota, Hans. Good morning. Is the volume low? Don't you even. Good to go. Good morning. Audio is low. That's tremendous. Let's see. Stand by. How about now? Check. Good. Fabulous. Tremendous. Okay. Probably the CIA, TFBI snuck in here and played with my settings. All right, we're gonna go to the whiteboard, do a little threat matrix, and then we'll get into some screen share stuff. Good morning, Better Nation. Weekly threat matrix overview: food scarcity, every natural disaster and humanitarian crisis continues to take away from the overall food produced. Experts have warned of a global food crisis. Even if Americans are blessed with full shelves, the prices may continue to climb, impacting the poor more heavily. So food scarcity, we've got an indicator here that's on the civilian side. It's also on the side of the system. Economic crisis. Unemployment benefits are creating issues for small businesses and restaurants desperate to hire workers in at least Virginia and Western Pennsylvania. Trib Live reported that people are asking to get paid under the table so that they can stay on unemployment. With the extra payouts granted by the government set to last into September, this will likely be an ongoing problem. Rome burning. Global and local shortages continue as before. That's going to be a civilian indicator, a system indicator, government indicator. Building materials. Manufactured goods. Gasoline availability. All issues. War. How about foreign bad actors? Russia, China, our system is definitely involved with that, as is our government. Russia is moving suspiciously on the Ukrainian border, which we'll be talking about shortly, and in the Arctic, and China continues to pressure its neighbors by overstepping the South China Sea. Both have been warned, air quote warned, by Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who vowed there will be consequences, air quote, for changing the existing status quo by force, and reaffirmed the U.S. commitment to Taiwan. So that is, we got Taiwan, Russia, China, the United States. There's a whole, yeah. Tyranny. Biden issued 6 executive actions on gun control. So So let's see. That's the government. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That also is the system. And disinformation. White evangelicals have been singled out for implications in future outbreaks due to hesitancy to receive this new mRNA vaccine. Yeah, I'm not taking it, bro. So that's civilian. That's the system. And then civil unrest. Knoxville school shooting. That's civilian. Duante Wright. Civilian. System. And how about Portland is still on fire? That has a lot to do with civilians and the government and the system. So let's go ahead and total this up. Food shortage. We've got two indicators. Civil unrest. We've got six. Economic crisis. We have 1, 2, 3, 4. War. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Tyranny. 7. Disinformation. 2. Rome is burning. We've got 6. Oh, look at that. 6, 6, 6. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is the mark of the beast. Did not plan that. 4, 7, 8. Civilians have got 8 of these things going on. Government 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 10. The system 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. A lot of indicators on the board today. Foreign bad actors 2, but that's a big 2 because that is Russia and China. So that's huge. And then we've got 4 over here. So if we're going to pick out some indicators here, threat matrix. Our biggest issues currently are examples of Rome burning, i.e. destabilization of the civilized West. You guys can't see me. Can you see me now? Sorry, I get a little worked up. Destabilization of the civilized West, Rome burning, okay? The system going away. We have tyranny. That ties into the system here in America going away. We've got war with Russia and or China and civil unrest. Civil unrest, war, tyranny, and Rome burning are all right there. A 7 and 3 6s. How interesting. Who are our primary issues here? The United States federal government and then civilians and the system. And then, of course, Russia and China. So most imminent threats are probably Russia and China, coupled with tyranny and war. But long-term, that's micro. Macro, long-term, civil unrest and Rome burning because of civilians and the system and the friction in between those two things. That's our threat matrix today, this week. Let me put up my tremendous blue marker. Thank you, PHL Holsters. PHL Knife and Tool. All right. Now, do we even still have a live stream, bro? Do you even live stream, bro? Let's go back over here. Yes, we have a live stream. How tremendous. Fabulous. Let's shrink this down like this. Go to screen share. Go over here. Good morning, everybody. Here we go. I would encourage you to please like, subscribe, and share. That helps us in our ongoing battle against the evil algorithmic robots. And yes, I 100% stole that phrase from Stu Bregeer at The Blaze because it's awesome. So you're welcome, question mark. You can and should support us on Patreon.com. It's $1 a month or $10 a year to get started. If you're concerned about YouTube censorship, as we are, you can find us there. We also have an alternate channel called The Blue Collar President here on YouTube. But everything we do, including everything you see on YouTube, is available on Patreon. Plus an additional minimum 30, more like 100 exclusive pieces of content per month. So if you like the Bear experience, there's a lot more bear to experience on Patreon because there's things we just can't do anymore here on the YouTubes. Lastly, please check out our small businesses. You can support us at bearindependent.com and refugemedical.com. Because tremendous, believe it. Absolutely. Get a hold of us, please. Go over here to bearindependent.com, click the contact page, and you can drop us a line at the intel at for the Dance Monkeys here, or also on the admin. If you have some administrative needs you need our badass administrators to deal with, you can contact them here. Or you can send us intel here, bearindependent.com. All the things are here, okay? They're all here. You just click around, they're all here. My Instagram page, yeah, look at that. That's some delicious flatbread I made. It was awesome. Moving right along. COVID variant from South Africa was able to, quote, break through, end quote, the Pfizer vaccine in an Israeli study. Key points from CNBC.com. The coronavirus variant, first discovered in South Africa, is able to evade some of the protection of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, according to a new Israeli study. Huh. It's almost like I got a whole stack of papers right here. It's almost like all this is like warnings and, let's see, what is this? This is the Pfizer-BioNTech right here. Here we go. To say nothing of America's frontline doctors' white paper on experimental vaccines for COVID-19. It's almost as if they're experimental. It's almost as if right here, from the Pfizer-BioNTech, it says, the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine is an unapproved vaccine that may prevent COVID-19. There is no FDA-approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19. It's almost as if, I'm not saying it is this way, but it's almost as if the Pfizer-BioNTech, air quote, vaccine isn't actually approved by the FDA, and that there is no vaccine approved by the FDA to prevent COVID-19. I mean, that might be exactly what the fact sheet from Pfizer-BioNTech says right here. That could be exactly what it says. But, yeah. Here's your emergency use authorization. BioNTech manufactured in Mainz, Germany, and Pfizer out of New York, New York. Yup. What a coinkydink. Who'd have thought? Come on, thumbs. Do your thumb thing. The Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine has not undergone the same type of review as the FDA-approved or cleared product. You can see everything that's highlighted here. When you get your first dose, you will get a vaccination card to show when you return for your second dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Remember to bring your card when you return. The Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine has been shown to prevent COVID-19 following two doses given 3 weeks apart. The duration of protection against COVID-19 is currently unknown. And the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine is an unapproved vaccine that may prevent COVID-19. There is no FDA-approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19. Got it. Thanks, Pfizer. So, moving right along. Researchers found the prevalence of B.1.351 among patients who received two doses of the vaccine was about 8 times higher than those who were unvaccinated. So, coronavirus variant first discovered in South Africa is able to evade some of the protection of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, according to a new Israeli study which has not yet been peer-reviewed. I'm sure it'll be shredded by peer review because those peers are dependent upon governments, ours and others, for funding, which means that they will march in lockstep to what the government has to say if they want their projects to be funded, or their projects will get defunded. Yay, government. Researchers at Tel Aviv University in Klaylit, the largest healthcare organization in Israel, examined nearly 400 people who had tested positive for COVID-19 after receiving at least one dose of the vaccine. So they got one dose of the vaccine and tested positive for COVID. It's almost as if there is no FDA-approved vaccine for the prevention of COVID. Huh, read that somewhere recently. They compared them to the same number of people who were infected and unvaccinated. The researchers found the prevalence of the variant from South Africa, known as B.1.351, among patients who received two doses of the vaccine was about eight times higher than those who were unvaccinated. So, per this article, no vaccination, your incidence of B.1.351 was eight times less with no vaccination than those that had gotten both shots of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. That's quite interesting. The data published online over the weekend suggests that this B.1.351 is better able to break through the protection of the vaccine than the original strain, researchers wrote in a study. It also sounds like that if the unvaccinated people have eight times less of this B.1.351, it sounds like whatever's happening with this particular, this is me speaking, whatever's happening with this particular vaccine is actually making you more likely, eight times more likely to get B.1.351 or whatever. It just sounds like it's an extra on Star Wars. What the hell? Blah, blah, blah. Based on patterns in the general population, we would have expected just one case of the South African variant, but we saw eight. Also, small sample size. Roger that. Moving right along. Interestingly, I think I lost. This is the link that I need right here. Boom. Give me that. Copy to clipboard. Boom. Control V. Go. That's what I was looking for. U.S. government scientist reveals new COVID monitoring devices that gets implanted under the skin. Perfect. This is good stuff. Just what I've always wanted. Technology and medicine could produce an implant that allows, this is from westernjournal.com, that allows a person's health to be tracked. Retired Army Colonel Matt Hepburn, who worked for years with Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, aka DARPA, talked about the project in an interview that aired Sunday on the CBS show 60 Minutes. I need a thing to put my gum in. Hepburn, who still works for the Army as a physician and as a joint product lead, according to his LinkedIn page, showed off the implant to Bill Whitaker of CBS, who noted how the device could be used. It's also one simple trick to clean earwax down below here that's kind of gross. Thanks for popping that up. You know, I read somewhere recently that like 40% of the current United States military is unwilling to take the vaccine, 40%, and that it's becoming more and more likely that it's going to be mandated for members of the United States military, and that's not really appreciated by at least 40% of the United States military. So that'll get interesting. Tavar 7, Loomph, Badger, all the Blue Wrenches, Ulfidnar, Tribesman, good morning. Good morning, River Rat. What's going on, man? Oki, Sarah Hoskins, I appreciate you guys. 857 people in the chat currently. Bless y'all. Again, please remember to like, comment, subscribe, share. All that helps us in the YouTube algorithmic ongoing battle. Let's drink some of this Jocko. What is this? Jocko Go. Jocko Discipline Go. Get some jujitsu or whatever else he says. Huh. It tastes like you lick like an old orange peel rind. Yeah, that's what it is. Very old orange peel rindy. Back to the article, Western Journal. Consider a ship like the USS Theodore Roosevelt hobbled last year when 1,271 crew members tested positive for the coronavirus. What if everyone on board had their health monitored with this subdermal implant now in late stage testing? No, says me, Whitaker said. It's not some dreaded government microchip to track your every move, but a tissue-like gel engineered to continuously test your blood. It's a sensor, Hepburn said, displaying one of the creations. This tiny green thing in there, you put it underneath your skin, and what that tells you is that there are chemical reactions going on inside the body, and that signal means that you are going to have symptoms tomorrow. Hepburn likened the sensor to the check engine light on a car. Sailors would get the signal, then self-administer a blood draw and test themselves on site. Sailors are going to self-administer drawing blood. I don't know about all this. Results would be almost instant, he said. We can have that information in 3 to 5 minutes. As you truncate that time, you diagnose and treat. What you do is you stop the infection in its tracks. Yeah, also, that'd be great if there was maybe an actual pandemic. But instead, what there is are 0 people getting the flu and 38 million people getting COVID. Because that makes a lot of sense. From the book of Revelation, in a little tiny book called The Bible, you might have heard of it. Revelation 13. The dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea. It had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on its horns, and each head a blasphemous name. The beast I saw resembled a leopard, but had feet like those of a bear and a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. Now listen, I don't even care if you get down with the Bible or not for this. This stuff is epic. Just think, like, it's just epic. Just listen to the imagery. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed. The whole world was filled with wonder and followed the beast. People worshipped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast, and they also worshipped the beast and asked, "Who is like the beast? Who can wage war against it?" The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and to exercise its authority for 42 months, or 3.5 years. It opened its mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. It was given power to wage war against God's holy people and to conquer them. And it was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast, all whose names have not been written in the Lamb's book of life, the Lamb who was slain from the creation of the world. Whoever has ears, let them hear. If anyone is to go into captivity they will go. If anyone is to be killed with the sword they will be killed. This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of God's people. Then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth, and it had 2 horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all the authority of the first beast on its behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose fatal wound had been healed. And it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of the people. Because of the signs it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast, it deceived the inhabitants of the earth. It ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that the image could speak and cause all who refers to worship image to be killed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or in their foreheads so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666. That's a nice cheery way to segue into the fact that, hey, if you don't want to die, maybe you need to get some freaking training on how to stop a bleed or something. You know what I mean? What's the chat doing now? 952 people. Jeremy Fox. Good morning, Tavar7. Not I, but the Spice Girls. Ashley Storms. Ahud Sword. Timothy. Milk Money, good morning. Good morning. Jake Jones is here. Good morning, Jake Jones. We can now continue with the show because, gosh dang it, Jake Jones is here. RefugeTraining.com. Cool, you got a kit. We appreciate that. Thank you for supporting our small businesses. Do you know how to use it? Because that matters. There's an Indianapolis class right over here that's sold out. We will be there on the 25th. But there's a more Oklahoma City area, level 1. There's a Stop the Bleed, level 1, in Tallahassee, Florida. And then there's a level 1 coming up, plus Forward Observer, 4-hour Stop the Bleed class, and a free 4-hour area study course in Dallas, Texas. So all this is at RefugeTraining.com. refugetraining.com. If you go to Refuge Medical up here, you can click this banner and it'll take you to dates and locations for training, or you can just go to refugetraining.com. You can see that right here, there's a Stop the Bleed class in Lewisville area, Texas. And essentially, you're going to get a four-hour Stop the Bleed class because it's on a Friday. We sweeten the deal. You take a day off of work. You come to class on Friday. And then in the afternoon, because you took a day off of work, Sam Culper from Forward Observer is going to give you a four-hour block of instruction on how to do an area study for free. So I know the vast majority of the people within the sound of my voice don't know honky about how to put an area study together. You need to come to this class. If you're within 3 hours of Lewisville, Texas, you need to come to this class. I highly, highly, highly recommend you come to this class. I'm going to do everything in my power to be there. I know how to do an area study, and I want to take the class. Additionally, Sam Culper at Forward Observer is doing a tactical, what is he calling it? Gosh, CTR class. Close Tactical Reconnaissance class, Saturday and Sunday at the same location. So if you want to take the whole weekend, come to Stop the Bleed in the morning, area study class in the afternoon, CTR course, Close Tactical Reconnaissance course, Friday, Saturday, all the same place. Spend the weekend at the hotel. Have a blast. Learn how to not die in the apocalypse. So you can get our four-hour class information right here at refugetraining.com. Not only for the Dallas, Texas area with the free area study, but Tallahassee, Florida, and Moore, Oklahoma, which is Oklahoma City area. All those dates are live right now. And you can also go to Forward Observer, check out his dates for the close tactical reconnaissance course as well. So, y'all been screaming about, Bear, we need dates. Great news. You got dates. They're at refugetraining.com. Shout out to everybody who was in Atlanta-ish this past weekend. Y'all did a great job learning how to not die. We got to meet like 4 dozen of the Bear Nation this past weekend. Made some new friends. It was wonderful. It was tremendous. Believe it. Believe it. Believe it. Southeastern Missouri, Keith Brooks is in the works. We will be scheduling a Springfield date. So stay tuned, Keith Brooks and everybody else. Not dying is so cool. Daniel Streety, what's up, bro? Bread for War, my brother. If you're in the mood for some metal that's honorific of the Father, Bread for War, not B-R-E-A-D, not like, you know, no carbs. It's keto-friendly metal. B-R-E-D, the number 4, War, Bread for War. That's our buddy Daniel. Speaking of apocalyptic things in the Bible, Russia amasses troops near U.S. ally Ukraine. But what is Putin's goal? This is from NBCnews.com. Understand that this is not an endorsement of any of these websites. It's just simply a place to refer to. By Alexander Smith and Matthew Bodner, tens of thousands of Russian troops massing near the Ukrainian border, convoys of tanks and deadly escalation in the grinding trench war in eastern Ukraine. All that's hyperbole. There is not a grinding trench war in eastern Ukraine. Study World War I, and you would never make the comparison of what's going on in the Russian, Russo-Ukrainian boundary as a trench war. But that's what news agencies, air quote news agencies, do. They hyperbolize to get people all spun up. I was on the phone with a brother yesterday asking about the possibility of nuclear war because of this border crisis with Russia and Ukraine. We're going to look at a map in a minute and talk about why I think nuclear weapons are 100% off the table with this action. Could be proven wrong, but my opinion is I think they're off the table. These storm clouds on Europe's eastern flank are causing grave alarm in Washington and across the continent. Quote, we are now seeing the largest concentration of Russian forces on Ukraine's border since 2014, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Tuesday after flying to NATO's headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. That is a deep concern not only to Ukraine but to the United States. Yeah, because you have an agreement in place, Antony, that, you know, an attack on one is an attack on all. Where we go one, we go all, or whatever. Which means if Russia escalates, NATO retaliates. In a call with Russian President Vladimir Putin later in the day, President Joe Biden, declared Washington's, quote, unwavering commitment to Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity, end quote, called on Russia to de-escalate tensions, a White House readout said. Western officials and experts are now trying to decipher what Moscow might be planning. Is Putin testing Biden's mettle? No. Or is he actually trying to spark fresh military conflict on the fringes of Europe? No. The optimistic assessment is that this is meant to intimidate Ukraine, said Michael Kaufman, a senior research scientist. You think so? Meant to intimidate Ukraine. Well, this guy, I understand why they put him on the TV. Because clearly, if he's not a doctor, he should be. I'd let him operate on me right now. This guy knows what he's talking about. The pessimistic assessment, which I think is a lower probability, but nonetheless very worth considering, is that Russia is actually spoiling for a fight and that they're looking to bait Ukraine into a miscalculation. Russia and the Ukraine have been locked in conflict since 2014, when Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula and began supporting separatists in the country's east. That war has rumbled on ever since, costing some 14,000 lives despite a series of shaky ceasefires. Russia has started sending thousands of troops, tanks, artillery, and other units to Crimea and regions along its 1,200-mile land border with Ukraine, according to Western governments and independent experts who monitor these maneuvers. The Russian troop numbers number in 40,000 in Crimea and another 40,000 in other regions along the border. Given that the Russian military has an estimated 800,000 to 900,000 troops, that would be approximately 10% of the Russian military's total manpower, according to Rob Lee, a former U.S. Marine who now tracks military deployments at the Department of War. I love this picture. The footer says, a Ukrainian soldier fighting Russian-backed separatists attempts to shoot down a suspected drone near Donetsk, Ukraine on Sunday. I don't think that's what's happening in that picture, but that's cool. It's a good picture anyway. Look, he's got the brass case right here flying out of the thing. That might, I don't know, the action's forward, so that might even be photoshopped, but I don't know. There's no muzzle blast right here. Cool. Whatever. We could drone on and on with this NBC News article, but they don't know what the hell they're talking about really. So let's go to the Google map. Let's see. Did we crash our live stream? No, there's still people here. Andrew Gagner. I appreciate the comment. NATO's response to Ukraine determines whether or not ethnic Russians in Lithuania are suddenly under threat too, which results in a land bridge to Kaliningrad and a buffer on the Polish border. Well, it's a good point. Let's take a look at the map. So, here's the deal. This giant landmass here that takes up more than half of the top half of the screen, takes up more than half the screen, almost all of the top half of the screen. This is Russia. Okay? From over here, from damn near touching to Alaska right here. Okay? It's almost like... what's that painting of Michelangelo's where the dude's reaching out to touch fingers with God? It's almost like that. Like almost touching right here, Russia and Alaska, okay? Bering Strait. All the way over here, if we head west from the Bering Strait, all the way over here to Finland and the former Soviet bloc nations, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Belarus, and Ukraine here. And what we would call Eastern Europe, okay? So, again, here's Ukraine. You can see it. It's in the top center of your screen now. There's the Ukraine. It's a pretty good-sized country. It's about the same size as Moldova, Romania, Hungary, and Slovakia, and and maybe part of Poland all put together. Pretty good sized country right there. But let's just zoom out again. Here's Russia. Okay. So, Russia, Ukraine. For comparison, here's the United States. And I'm not trying to talk to you like you're a third grader. I'm just showing you for comparison. Here's the United States. We have, you know, four time zones. The contiguous United States. We have four time zones. Eastern, Mountain, Central. My wife just got into my brain. We have the Pacific, we have Mountain, we have Central, and we have Eastern, four time zones. Russia, I believe, has 11 time zones, okay? Pretty big country, pretty big place. And here's the Ukraine. So what we're going to focus on here is the shared border between Russia and the Ukraine. So if we zoom in a little bit here, you see this squiggly line on the map right here? This is this border, this 1,200-mile border in between Russia to on the top right of the screen and Ukraine on the top left of the screen. So there's 40,000 troops along this line here between Russia and the Ukraine. And then there's an additional 40,000 troops right here in this region, this peninsula that juts out. That borders the Sea of Azov into the Black Sea here. This is Crimea. Crimea River. Okay. Now, right here is this demarcation, this line, this little dotted line that you can see between Crimea and Ukraine. This line, Russia is now saying Crimea belongs to us. Because you can see how Russia wraps around here and then into the Ukraine. And Ukraine is saying, nope, that's ours. Very clearly, it's connected to us. Now, why would Russia be interested in the Ukraine and this region here, the Donetsk region? Where I'm moving my cursor around, this area right here is what's known as the Donbas region, okay? So if we're to look at Ukraine, the Donbas region is bordered on the north, the east, and the south by Russia. And then the Crimean Peninsula has got Russia to the east of it. And so Donbas, they could take about that fast. Crimea, they've already taken. So the Sea of Azov, there's a little canal that runs from through the Sea of Azov here into the Black Sea. Why is that important? Well, commerce. You've got Russia here rather than Crimea. Or Ukraine, rather. And why do we want Crimea and the Donetsk region? Well, the Baltic Sea, all the way up here, which is also, see, Russia has ports here. These are warm weather ports. They're only good to go when it's not, you know, negative 19,000 degrees in northern Russia, aka Finland. Right, they've got these warm weather ports here in St. Petersburg, and then you've got the Baltic Sea, and you can get out from the Baltic Sea into the North Sea. You can also get from the Baltic Sea, believe it or not, riverine from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea through Belarus, Lithuania, Ukraine into the Black Sea, and there's a canal here from the Black Sea into the Aegean Sea as well at Istanbul. Okay, so why is this important? Militarily, it's important, but it's also important for commerce. And I think that's what most people are missing right now in the argument, the conversation about Russia and Ukraine is commerce. So let's look at Crimea and the Donbas region. So first we want to look at the Donbas region. That's this area right here inside of the Ukraine, but bordered in Russia on the north, on the east, and on the south. Is everybody hanging with me? Are you all bored to death? Are there still people here? Yes, there are people here. I appreciate y'all. Thank you so much. 1117. Bless y'all. Let's go back to the maps. Okay, so the Donbas region here. If we go to our favorite bastion of truth, Wikipedia, we could see the economy in the Donbas region. And by the way, you've got links to all of this here in the description on YouTube and on Patreon. Dollar a month, 10 bucks a year to get started on Patreon. Patreon.com, search for Bear Independent. You'll find us there. I guarantee you, you're going to enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it, you're out one doll hair, bro. The Donbas region is dominated by heavy industries such as coal mining and metallurgy. Remember that war, at its most basic level, is a game of resources. It is the allocation of certain resources towards the defense of, right, or acquisition of other certain resources. So the Donbas region of Ukraine is dominated by heavy industries such as coal mining and metallurgy. This region takes its name from an abbreviation of the Donetsk Coal Basin, which is right here. Donetsk, this is it, right here. Coal Basin, all of this is filled with coal. Did you know just a couple years ago, the United States Air Force, I believe it was, stipulated that all of their vehicles, all of them, whether it's an aircraft or a truck or anything, all of their vehicles have to be able to run on coal to liquid fuel technology, I think by 2022. So don't discount coal, okay? Especially in these areas of the world where they don't care so much about the environment as much as we might. So this region is full of coal. Not only is it full of coal, it's also full of metal. Prior to the start of the region's war in April 2014, Donetsk and Luhansk oblasts together produced about 30% of Ukraine's exports. Other industries which may overlap include blast furnace and steel-making equipment, railway freight cars, metal-cutting machine tools, tunneling machines, agricultural harvesters and plowing systems, railway tracks, mining cars, electric locomotives, military vehicles, tractors, and excavators. The region also produces consumer goods like household washing machines, refrigerators, freezers, TV sets, leather footwear, and toilet soap. Over half of its production is exported. Okay? So that region, the Donbas region, is full of heavy industry, coal mining, metallurgy, agriculture. What about Crimea? Okay, so Crimea has strategic value. Crimea being this peninsula right here. Again, we can zoom in. This is contested territory. Ukraine says that Crimea belongs to them, and Ukraine is backed by NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, where we go one, we go all. And Russia, who has a veto power vote in NATO, says, nope, it belongs to us. So Crimea here, bordered to Ukraine, bordered by Ukraine proper on the north. And you can see the series of rivers here that connect from the Baltic Sea to the north by Finland all the way down here to the Black Sea with Russia and Ukraine. So Crimea's bordered to the north by Ukraine proper and to the east by Russia. And again, from the Sea of Azov or Azov, you've got this canal, the Kerch Strait. And the reason I wanted to go through this, honestly, is Pastor Joe Fox at Viking Preparedness has been talking a lot about what's been going on here on his Patreon page. And one of the things he's been saying is, get a map. Go look at a map. And I really don't think most of y'all are going to go look at a map. So I thought we would look at a map together so that you can understand the strategic importance of Crimea. Okay, so Russia here wants to control this strait. Because you control this strait, you have unfettered access to the Black Sea through here. Okay, they have ports here. So, let me zoom back out again. Also, Crimea. The Black Sea ports of Crimea, from Wikipedia, provide quick access to the Eastern Mediterranean, Balkans, and the Middle East. Historically, possession of the southern coast of Crimea was sought after by most empires of the greater region since antiquity. Roman, Byzantine, Ottoman, Russian, British and French, Nazi Germans, and the Soviets have all fought over Crimea. The nearby Dnieper River is a major waterway and transportation route that crosses the European continent from north to south and ultimately links the Black Sea with the Baltic Sea, of strategic importance since the historical trade route from the Varangians to the Greeks. The Black Sea serves as an economic thoroughfare connecting the Caucasus region and the Caspian Sea to Central and Eastern Europe. Economy, Crimea. The main branches of the modern Crimean economy are agriculture and fishing oyster pearls, industry and manufacturing, tourism, and ports. My opinion is the reason that Russia's interested is agriculture, industry, manufacturing, and ports. This area of the world is the breadbasket of that region, okay? The Russian annexation of Crimea in early 2014 and subsequent sanctions on Crimea, the tourist industry suffered. Number of tourist arrivals dropped. Most important industries in Crimea include food production, chemical fields, mechanical manufacturing, mechanical engineering, metalworking, and fuel production industries. 60% of the industry market belongs to food production. That's why I think Russia wants Crimea, both for the strategic reasons of the ports and the access through the Black Sea out to the greater region and food production, because war is at its most basic level a game of resources. Allocating certain resources towards the defense of or acquisition of other certain resources. And I think things be fixing to get tight. And so all of that to say, let's go back to the map. And forgive me for taking a long roundabout way to get here, but I wanted you to see the map and understand the strategic importance of both the Donbas region and Crimea. Why the mother hockey biscuits would Russia drop nuclear weapons on this region? I don't believe that they will, for three reasons. The first reason is you don't nuke something that you want to occupy. You nuke something that you don't want anybody to be able to occupy. The reason you would drop a nuke is to deny your enemy from having access to that place. You don't want nuclear fallout all over the place that you're going to send your people in. Newsflash, things tend to not grow for about 100 years in regions that have nuclear weapons detonated on them. When the primary reason you'd be interested in a territory is for food production, dropping nuclear weapons is a bad idea. And one could argue, well, yeah, dummy, they're not going to nuke the Crimea or the Donbas region. They'd nuke Kiev right up here. Okay, well, Kiev is also right along this river that connects their northern ports through Belarus and Lithuania back to the Baltic Sea up here in St. Petersburg. Okay, well, it's a tactical pocket nuke. Okay, let's get to points 2 and 3. So, first of all, you don't nuke things that you want to have the ability to occupy. It's like shooting the engine block out of a truck with a 50 cal. That's great if you don't want the bad guys to have the truck. But if you want to have the truck, maybe don't shoot the engine block out of it. Maybe think of another way that you could take the truck offline. Something that's repairable. So, that's the first reason. The second reason is the court of public opinion. Russia wants to flex because it can flex. Because Ukraine is this big here. Please look at the screen. Ukraine is this big. And Russia is this big. So Russia wants to flex because it can. And it's going to flex to make little itty-bitty Ukraine, by comparison, blink. And it wants, my opinion, Ukraine to blink. Because then we're talking a limited, conventional guns, bombs, tanks, planes, a limited, conventional engagement along this 1,200-mile region here, which Russia can and will press into and take this entire region. They would probably take up to this river, would be my guess. This eastern half of Ukraine would become Russian territory. Up to this, what's the name of this river here? Oh, yeah. The Dnieper River. That would be my guess. They press in along this 1,200 miles, and what is the Red Army good at? Grinding you to dust with sheer numbers. 800 to 900,000 of them. Up to 100,000 troops along this border right here. They press in. They take the eastern half of Ukraine. Now they squarely control Crimea. They control this river. And then they sue for peace. Ukraine says, we've had enough. We've had enough. Let's be friends again. Because Russia, if they were to drop nuclear weapons in the court of public opinion over something the size of this, okay, this big, this little tiny strategic piece of land, if you nuke somebody, it doesn't matter how important you think it is, this piece of Crimea. The rest of the world is going to see you as absolutely out of line. The brute force that would bring to mind will be completely unacceptable. And when your goal is to have access to resources, i.e. commerce and trade, you want the other kids in the sandbox to still play with you. You want to be enough of a bully that they respect you, but not so much of a bully that they won't play with you. And that's where I think Russia is there. And how do you escalate or de-escalate from nuclear weapons? It's like we're having a jiu-jitsu match and I start shooting people. Like, yeah, we could go back to arm bars, but I'm shooting people. Okay, same thing. So I don't think they're going to go to nuclear weapons. That's the second reason. The third reason why I don't think they're going to go to nuclear weapons is because regardless of what Vladimir Putin and Zelensky over here might think about the likelihood of nuclear weapons, again, in the court of public opinion, the environmental effects of dropping a nuclear weapon are so massive that whether or not Vladimir Putin cares about nuclear fallout, depending on which way the wind is blowing, Georgia, Turkey, Bulgaria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, Syria, Iran, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Belarus, Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Serbia, Kosovo, Macedonia, Greece, Albania, they're gonna care. They're gonna care. Because that fallout is going to cause a massive environmental hazard in this region, if not globally. Definitely regionally, if not globally. And again, when your goal, and I think it is Russia's goal, when your goal is to be enough of a tough guy on the playground that people don't mess with you, but not so much of a tough guy that you don't have any friends, you lose all of that for the three reasons stated when you use a nuclear weapon. Russia wants people to take them seriously when it comes to commerce, and they want They want to be able to move their products and have access to the products and resources that they need. This is very much so all tied up in Russia's ambitions to be able to move natural gas, cheap natural gas, into Eastern Europe. Now, if you live in Eastern Europe, do you care where the gas comes from when you flip your heater on? No, you don't care. You just want it to work, right? Well, the United States has interests in that, which is part of why we're at odds with Russia. It's part of why NATO is now involved in Ukraine. And Ukraine is a sovereign nation, and Ukraine and Russia do not get along with one another. They've had multiple, skirmishes over the last 100-ish years. And these little fancy lines on a map, history will show you they change all the time. They are just fancy lines on a map that somebody put there one day because enough people agreed that that's where the fancy line on the map goes. So all of this is flexible. That being said, I think you will have a limited conventional engagement, guns, tanks, bombs, planes, along this 1,200-mile border here between Russia and the Ukraine, but that nukes are out. Because you don't, first reason, you don't nuke something you want to occupy. You nuke something you want to deny to the enemy, at least under current doctrine, and or something you want to take offline. And I think that Russia is going to press western from this border up to the Dnieper River, Kiev here, and take all of this so that they squarely control Crimea if they do. They control the Donbas region, they control the river, and they control Crimea. That's what I would do if I was Russia. Could be wrong, but that's what I think is going to happen. So you don't want nuclear fallout there because your guys have to live in it. Your peasants have to work it. That's the first reason. The second reason is that in the court of public opinion, it would be so much overuse of force that nobody would play with you in the sandbox anymore. And now you can't get access to the goods and services that you needed in the first place. And you can't sell your things that you've been trying to sell in the first place. And lastly, the environmental impact in this entire region, if you were to drop a nuclear or thermonuclear weapon along this border, depending on which direction the prevailing winds are blowing, this whole region is going to experience fallout. And if they do, you've now turned this whole region against you, which now people are going to take NATO seriously. Russia dropped a nuclear weapon, you bet your ass that there's going to be a response to that. Russia doesn't want a response to that. They want ports, they want food, they want commerce. They don't want the whole world trying to kill them. And with the environmental impact of dropping those weapons, you've now, not only have you, you've got the whole world mad at you because of overuse of force, you've got the entire region that surrounds you being directly affected by your overuse of force, which means that, yeah, now they're interested in kicking your ass. And so you've gone from a limited regional conflict with conventional weapons to literally World War III if you use a nuclear weapon. And cost-benefit analysis, why would you? If you were Russia, why would you? The reason I think that nuclear weapons come up in the conversation is because they only work as a deterrent if you're actually willing to use them. So you have to feign as if you are willing to drop them so that the other side goes, we got to take them seriously or they're going to drop some nukes. And maybe they would, but in a conflict of this scale, what does it gain you? My summation is nothing. It gains you nothing. So, all right, fabulous, wonderful, 1,200 people on the live stream. We're going to briefly touch on Deagle's predictions, and then we're out of here today. Tsar Bomba, I think somebody's talking about. What about ICBMs to U.S. to show full force because they don't need our East Coast? Bro, so Jay Morris, good morning, brother. Here's the deal. There are nuclear-capable United States submarines in every one of the great seas, at least a couple of them. We have the capability on each one of those submarines, there's 48 missiles, and on each missile, there's 15 warheads. What does that work out to? 720 thermonuclear warheads. that if a nation was to, and this is just on our submarine capabilities, to say nothing of strategic bomb wings, a country launches something at us, those submarines have the ability to surface, launch their entire payload, and get back underneath the water in 2 minutes. Each one has 720 warheads. The country of origin that launched a nuclear-tipped missile at us would cease to exist before their missile landed. This is what I mean by nuclear deterrence. And at some point with nuclear weapons, you have to ask yourself, is there a, if we engage in full-blown nuclear warfare, is there a world left to inherit when we're done? And these are the types of questions that Oppenheimer et al. Were discussing during and after the Manhattan Project. And a phenomenal study on this is the podcast Destroyer of the World by Dan Carlin, Hardcore History. Just listened to this recently, and it's very relevant to what's going on in the world right now. It's only a six-hour-long podcast, Destroyer of the Worlds, Hardcore History. Dan Carlin talks about this period of time when the two bombs that were dropped August 6th and August 9th, 1945, on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, up to the Cuban Missile Crisis, about a 15-year period, 18-year period there, where the proliferation of nuclear weapons and the strategery that was employed with the deployment or threat of deployment of nuclear weapons and testing during that time. And make no mistake, it certainly informs the talk I've given today. So it's a phenomenal podcast if you want to learn more about that. But you have to be willing to threaten somebody with them, which means you have to be willing to use them. However, the downstream ramifications of using a nuclear weapon are so severe that it's only a last-case scenario. In fact, I saw somebody, some article recently was saying it was ThreatCon level one, man. Well, ThreatCon level one means that literally nuclear war is imminent. It is not that. That is what we like to call bullshit. So, moving right along. Deagle's predictions, very strange. We're going to touch on these briefly. We touched on them when we talked with Christian, the Ice Age farmer. The year 2017, the United States has a population of 327 million. Forecasted for 2025 is 100 million. There's only a handful of ways this could happen. 225 million people die off. 225 million people, or two-thirds of the people, are starved. Think about that. Nuclear holocaust. Or the landmass of the United States is significantly different. Significantly different. Now, you'll notice that in this thing that's up on the screen right here, you've got, it does not have the same information. So 9.6 million square miles, surface area of the country. Well, I don't have surface area of the country in the bottom half of this graph that's up here. But maybe this is an indication of balkanization, meaning that the United States is not the United States anymore. So 327 million people currently with the contiguous lower 48, and that becomes 100 million people because the contiguous 48 has broken into balkanized regions. I don't know. But all of that gets back to our three primary threats for SHTF that we're paying attention to. One is civil unrest because it can and will lead to balkanization. One is food scarcity because it can and will lead to food being weaponized against you, as we've seen in socialist regimes all around the world for the last 100 years. And then the last is economic collapse. And economic collapse is not only likely, I'd say it's probable, and it undermines the legitimacy of the existing governance. And when legitimacy of existing governance is undermined, you get insurgency and you get balkanization, because I no longer want to play in your sandbox because I'm not having any fun in there. If I'm going to starve to death and the money is worth nothing, I don't want to be a part of your game anymore. I'm going to go make my own game, or I'm going to find somebody else's game, which is how you end up with balkanization and insurgencies and things like that. So, interestingly, again, this is from Deagle, DEAGEL.com, United States of America. These are called the Deagle Predictions. You should go check them out. Lastly, but not leastly, medical kits at refugemedical.com, handmade, made in America, guaranteed forever. The Bare Fac and Bare Minimum, we've got these things in stock. They're flying off the shelves, people. They're shipping out super fast right now. They've got everything you need and nothing you don't for working the MARCH algorithm, which is massive bleeding, airway, respiratory, circulatory, head injuries, and hypothermia. And then the dash E in the MARCH algorithm is everything else. Each kit is hand-built and assembled just for you. Here in the Estados Unidos, we use nothing but high-quality North American rescue components. I mean, look at this stitching, bro. Look, that's like super zoomed in. Super zoomed in. Look at that. Look at that right there. You've got quick clot in here. You've got a cat tourniquet. You've got pressure bandages. You've got a legitimate 3 1/4 inch ARS decompression needle for tension pneumothorax. You've got gloves. You've got duct tape. You've got rolled duct tape, flat duct tape, triangle bandage, foil blanket for hypothermia. You've got quick clot. You've got compressed gauze for wound packing. I mean, there's more in this kit than kits that cost 1.5 times this and aren't made in the United States. So if you think your MyMedic kit is good, get one of these and compare them side to side. For real. They're absolutely wonderful kits. They exceed military specification. We are up to 15 lives saved with these kits, as well as a toe and a dog that we're aware of, and myriad other injuries that have been treated with these kits. One guy recently was sandblasting in his shop, and something happened with a sandblasting nozzle, like swiped past his leg. He sent images, pictures to admin at Bear Independent, and he sandblasted the dang skin off of his leg. Well, he ran to the other corner of the shop, grabbed his Bear Fac, and fixed it with some of this right here, some of this gauze right here, and some of this tape, and some of these right there, little BZK antiseptic wipes. And he's a tough guy, got back to work. So, and another thing to realize is of the 15 lives saved with this kit up to this point, more of those than anything else have been in motor vehicles. And so if you're part of the 7% of the population that wears body armor for a living, if you're in public safety or the military, you understand the importance of having a kit like this. But if you're the other 93% of people that have no idea why you need a bleeding control kit, it's because you can get in a car wreck and sever your femoral artery with your own bone because of a bad wreck and bleed out and die in 90 seconds. That's the first life that was ever saved with a Bare Fac was just that. The most recent life that has been saved with a Bare Fac was a car that went down a 40-foot embankment, and Tread on This of the Bear Nation happened to be on scene, ran down the embankment with his Bare Fac, and was able to save the person's life with their medical kit because they had it. So you can get the Bare Fac, the Bare Minimum, and everything else under the sun. If it's a first aid kit and you need it, we probably have one of it, a version of it. I mean, Stomp Bag's literally a hospital on your back, bro. Have you ever, like, even looked at what's inside of this thing? It's massive. This thing is massive. People see these in real life, and they're like, wow. Carl from Tactical Rifleman is like, dude, you can't make a better. He goes, I went up into my attic and looked at my kits. He's like, yeah. Only difference was the fluids in my kit were expired. So when you've got, you know, Special Forces medics going, you can't make a better kit than this, you know you're onto something. So anyway, all that's at refugemedical.com. You can check it out. You can always hit us at bearindependent.com as well. Got all the things going on over there. I appreciate y'all. There's links to Grindstone Ministries in the description. All of our supporters. You know, Chaffee Oat Cigars and Sanctified Supply Co. and Amendment 1 Preparedness, and just AdventureFrontier.com, and just all of our people. Bless y'all. Thank you to everybody who came out to the most recent training in Atlanta. Y'all are the best. Y'all are the best. Believe it. Believe it. Bear out. Shalom.